It's time for ROTD Weekend.
Happy Valentine's Day. I hope you are doing something lovely, either with yourself because you love yourself or with someone else that you love. I am spending the day with Marty. I will say it has been a week. We've both been sick. You can probably hear it in my voice. I'm feeling much better, but there was a chunk of time, about 5 days ago, where I had a fever and felt awful, and then he got it right after me and was even worse. His fever was worse, and he had a tough week. Just, he teaches at the university, and it was one of their, like, big test weeks, so he had, like, review sessions and was getting home late, and he's coming home all shivery, poor thing. So, yeah, it's been a tough week, but we are both feeling much better, and we are planning to spend a very relaxing weekend together. The kids aren't here, and we are not doing anything. We don't have any plans because we weren't sure how we'd be feeling. We didn't make any plans with friends. We don't have any improv performances or anything like that going on. And so we are just relaxing at home together. We've even put in some, like, rules in place about, like, if one of us starts talking about any, like, home improvements that need to be done or notices anything wrong with the house, we are supposed to stop them from talking about it. I might even actually institute a little safe word. Like, sometimes we have the word porcupine, which means, hey, we agreed to not talk about this for now. So porcupine, and we just, like, stop so that we don't end up in that situation. You know what I mean, right? Where you're, like, relaxing together and hanging out, and then suddenly you've noticed that, well, actually, this is what happened a couple weeks ago. Suddenly we noticed that there was this new tree in our backyard that wasn't doing very well. And then we're both out there and one of us is researching online what could be wrong. And, like, it turns into this whole thing, and the relaxation we were doing was over. So we do not want that this weekend. No chore creep, just relaxing and getting better and spending time together. To that end, I am planning mostly really simple food for us, but I want to do something really special for Valentine's Day. And so I've turned to my own Valentine's Day recipe list. So if you follow me on social media, you might have seen a little carousel we did of some Valentine's Day inspiration recipes. And I was sitting here thinking to myself, what should I make for me and Marty for Valentine's Day? And was like, oh, wait, I have a list for that. And turned to my own list. And you know what? I have the most amazing meal planned. It's things that both Marty and I love. So we are starting with a classic shrimp cocktail, and I have a recipe for you for that with the cocktail sauce and how to cook the shrimp, except we are using the Argentine red shrimp. If you have not had these yet, you need to go find them now. I first had them when my dad found them. Well, I guess both my parents were there. My parents found them at the Daytona Beach flea market. I am not kidding. I'm sure I've told you this before. There's a fishmonger who shows up with a big truck and all kinds of frozen seafood. And so they got them from him and they brought them home and we all loved them. And then my parents would keep going back to the Daytona Beach flea market to get these shrimp when they had some free time. They would head out there and get them. And then, of course, my parents went back to Canada when they were not snowbirding anymore and he couldn't find them there. I actually, for Father's Day or his birthday, they're often on the same day. My dad's birthday is in the middle of June. For one of those two, I actually found some for him from a fishmonger near-ish where he lives, and I had them sent to him, and he loved that. So Argentine red shrimp, they are already red even when they're raw, so they're a little bit harder to tell when they're done, but they have this amazing taste like lobster, and they're very plump. They're just amazing, amazing shrimp. So I'm going to cook the Argentine red shrimp the way that I would for shrimp cocktail normally and have them in a shrimp cocktail so they'll be chilled. We did that for Christmas Eve like 2 years ago. Delicious. That's going to be our appetizer. Then we are having filet mignon, and I have the perfect recipe for filet mignon. Very simple, very basic. It is how I do it. You guys know Marty likes his steaks a little bit more towards well done, so I do his longer. I do mine less time, but they're really, you know, not my favorite cut. They're his favorite cut of steak. They're not mine. He likes how lean and tender they are. I like a steak with a little more marbling, a little bit more fat and bad stuff going on. That is just me, but they're perfect because they're the right portion, right? If we're going to have the shrimp cocktail first, and then we want to have an entree, maybe with a side dish that I'm going to talk about, and maybe even a dessert, I can't have a ribeye. You know, I mean, I don't think I can ever eat a whole ribeye myself, but, like, definitely not in this situation. So two little filet mignon steaks it's going to be. And I'm going to make that toss salad that I tell you about all the time. That is not a recipe on my website. Although there's one that's very close that I saw the other day. I'm going to link to that for you. It's a toss salad. It's the one that I did on the YouTube live that we did. Was it 2 weeks ago already? Wow. So I will link to the YouTube live as well. And you can see me make the salad. I realized, though, when I watched that after, that I forgot to put the salt in the salad, and it is the best part. I don't know how I missed it. After you toss everything together and you taste a leaf and make sure that it's dressed just the way you want, you sprinkle some coarse kosher salt over top, and you get these little crispy bits of salt in the salad. It is the best part, and I missed it during the live filming. I guess that's why live is live, right? Things don't go perfectly. I missed the salt. Don't miss the salt. The salt is actually in the recipe that I'm going to link to. So if you're following the recipe, you won't miss it. But yeah, that is Marty's favorite salad, the extra garlicky salad. I'm just doing it with spring mix this time. That's how he likes it best. Sometimes I add other vegetables and things, but just the spring mix. And then, you know, he loves a loaded baked potato, but I know that with this dinner, we can't have a whole one. So I might get one potato for the two of us and do it just in the microwave to heat through, like cook through, you know, baked potatoes in the microwave. I have a recipe for that too. I have recipes for everything, don't I? I will link to how to bake a potato in the microwave if you don't have that. But then what I like to do is cut it in half, rub a little bit of olive oil on the outside, a little bit of salt, maybe some pepper on the outside, and then put it in the air fryer until the skins get crispy. And that is the best. And then we'll top it with some sour cream. He can load his up with whatever he wants. I'm probably going to do sour cream and green onion, although I often do cottage cheese instead of sour cream in my baked potato. I just love cottage cheese. I love sour cream too, but cottage cheese on a baked potato is delicious with lots of green onions, of course. Cottage cheese and green onions is one of my favorite combinations. Put that on a potato, I'm happy. I don't even need the steak, but no, I'll make the filet mignon still for sure. So we've got the Argentine red shrimp cocktail. We've got the filet mignon and the amazing garlicky salad and half of a potato each. And then for dessert, you know, we don't have huge sweet tooths, but we both really like fruit with like creamy elements. And I'm going to do the vanilla custard that I recommended in that social media carousel. It's just a very simple, classic custard recipe, homemade. And I'm going to put that on some berries. And I think that'll be it. Although I might turn it into a chantilly cream. I think that's when you mix the custard with whipped cream, it gets even lighter and fluffier, and then put that on the berries. But I think that is going to be it. The blueberries at the grocery store right now, they have I think they're the Driscoll's brand. They're the sweetest berry crop. They're more expensive. Like they're ridiculously expensive, honestly, but they're these big, almost crispy blueberries that have this really, really intense flavor. I love them. So I'm hoping to get some of those, and that will be our Valentine's Day dinner. Pretty easy to make, really, because the shrimp I'm cooking straight from frozen and chilling. We can have that shrimp cocktail anytime. The cocktail sauce will be made, set aside. The potatoes, like I said, I'm pre-doing them in the microwave and then just finishing them in the air fryer for the last little bit of time. The steaks will be in the pan. The salad's easy. Yeah, all of this is like make ahead except for like the steak and the potato the last minute. I am happy this is going to fit into our relaxing weekend. You know, I feel like I have rambled on longer than I usually do at the beginning of these episodes. I think it's because I'm still a little lightheaded. I know you can hear it in my throat. I'm not completely myself. So I'm not going to apologize for it because it is me, but you know, I rambled. There it is. That is truth. But now you know every single thing that I'm making for Valentine's Day. I will put all those links in the show notes for the podcast episode for sure for you. There's also a link to the Valentine's Day recipe list. I'll link to that as well. And then you can find all of them. There are 11 romantic recipes there for you to choose from. Now, for our guest today, I am playing a conversation from before. It's from a couple of years ago. I'm going to say, you know, I told you that my laptop had a virus. It still has a virus. I'm still using an older laptop, and the older one is not compatible with my recording equipment. You don't need to know all of these details, but I am not able to record interviews with guests at the moment. I have a solution for next week. You are getting a brand new conversation next week. It is being recorded live in person, so that one does not rely on all of the like integrated software laptop recording equipment. We'll just do it together live. But after that, hopefully things will be fixed after that. But yes, that is why I'm doing another of the From the Vault episodes. Last week was a new one I had pre-recorded, but I've run out of recorded episodes. And until I get my laptop fixed, I have to go into the older episodes. Having said that, this is a delightful conversation, especially if you are somebody who is cooking in tight quarters. Today, I am talking with Ashley Covelli from Big Flavors from a Tiny Kitchen. Ashley cooks in a small kitchen and is taking pictures of her food, testing her recipes, doing all of that. And she is here to give us her best tips for how to navigate all of that meal planning, shopping, keeping track of what's in your pantry, all of that when you have a small space. So if there are two of you in a small location for this Valentine's Day, this is the conversation for you. Let's listen to my talk with Ashley Covelli. Ashley Covelli, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Christine.
I am super excited to talk with you for a variety of reasons, but one of them is that you are celebrating a very exciting anniversary. What is it?
Yes, my first child, my website, turned 18 on August 1st, which is insane. It can now be responsible for all its own decisions and, you know, it can earn some money.
That's hilarious.
You know, start taking care of me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So your site, Big Flavors from a Tiny Kitchen, you've been blogging there for 18 years.
Yeah. I like jokingly, but not jokingly, refer to myself as like a dinosaur blogger because, I mean, things have changed a lot in that amount of time. So yeah, I've seen a lot of phases and a lot of food trends, and it's always an adventure.
For sure. And your adventure has been somewhat consistent. So the name in your site says a tiny kitchen. Are you still in a tiny kitchen?
I am. We were hoping to move to a bigger place. And then 2020 happened. So we're kind of sitting tight. I will say if one day I do get a larger kitchen, I will not be changing the name of my website. But, you know, you really can do a lot with a small space. So I like it.
So I am a blogger like you, and I have a large kitchen. I don't even know where to start and ask you questions about this, but like, are you constantly moving things around? Do you have like a strategy for cooking in the small kitchen, or what, where do you start? If you're set that, I guess that's what, if I'm suddenly right. in a small kitchen, what do I even start with?
I think part of it is, you know, kind of being careful with what you let into your kitchen, especially like appliance wise and stuff like that. Space is at a premium. I do have like certain things stored outside of my kitchen, like food processor, ice cream maker, stuff like that isn't even in the kitchen because there's no room. But just trying to be intentional about what I keep on hand. I still find myself doing most of my work on one tiny portion of my counter, even though I do have more since we remodeled, just because it's convenient. It's in between the stove, the sink. So it's like, I'm also really good at Tetris. So I can kind of like get things into the cabinets and find them easily, and everything's within an arm's reach. I mean, it's kind of nice in some ways. I would love more storage space. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing I feel like with our pantry. It's literally one cabinet. That's
wow.
it. Like a small, like from the counter down cabinet. But trying to stay organized with it, like I've started keeping a list and keeping it updated so I know what I have on hand. So I'm not buying things that are like, well, I already have 8 cans of chickpeas. Why do I need another one?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. So, okay, yeah. I have two things to say. What I find fascinating, even though I have a big kitchen, is that I always stand in the same spot too. And it is that spot. It is, for me, it's to the right of my sink with my stove behind me. Mm-hmm. And then I'm piling dirty dishes to the left of the sink. So that's not a good workspace. And like for chopping and that kind of thing. And then on either side of my stove, there's like cabinets over them. So they're not great for like, I mean, you stand there when you're stirring something, but not for chopping. So even in this big kitchen, like you're just using this small spot all the time. So that's not that different. That's really interesting. I hadn't thought of that before.
Yeah. And then like, because if you can reach kind of everything you need from that one spot and like you only have to kind of leave that vicinity to go get certain tools or whatever, it makes it more efficient.
So you have this list of what you have in the pantry. Do you end up having to do a lot of meal planning, like very, very diligent meal planning too, to make sure that you're only getting what you need?
So in theory, yes, and it's lovely when that works out. But realistically, sometimes I'll just kind of look at it and be like, okay, I don't feel like going to the store right now. What do I have that I can work with? Mm-hmm. And it's just making sure to update that. And like, if I see my husband eating a can of tuna, I'd be like, did you mark that off the list? Because it's a shared thing, so we mm-hmm. can both update it.
Oh.
So that's been handy. But I do try, like, if I have, especially if it's a package of something that's too big for one recipe, I'll try to find another recipe to use the rest of it. So it doesn't mm-hmm. like, it's not that thing where you have a half a jar of something and it dies a slow death in your refrigerator. Cause I really try to watch the food waste when I can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then so the title of your 18-year-old fully legally adult blog.
My young adult.
Yeah. Big flavors. Do you feel like there is a challenge in getting all the flavors that somebody with a larger kitchen would have? You have that smaller pantry. Like, do you have strategies for making sure your food is still extra flavorful, even though you have fewer things at your fingertips?
I don't think so. I think honestly, sometimes having some parameters can help you be more creative. It's the same. I have a graphic design background, and having somebody sell you, make a billboard for me. It can be whatever you want. I have no, you know, whatever you want is maybe a little gives you too many options. But if they say, hey, I really want a photo of me and this color of blue, but other than that, like, it just gives you a sort of a box to work in. So if I know that I only have a couple of, I mean, I have a lot of spices in that small space, let's be real. And you know, certain ones pack more potent flavor than others. So I feel like the restraints are actually a positive.
No, that makes sense to me. I feel like we've probably talked about this before, actually, when I like work with different brands or sponsors and they're just like, I'm so happy to work with you. Yes, make a recipe using our product, make whatever you want.
Yep.
I have no idea what to do. Whereas when they say something like, there was literally I was working with an olive oil company and they were like, we've noticed that Korean food and vegan food are trending. And it's summertime. Can you do a vegan Korean summery appetizer?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. Yes, I can.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It's way easier.
That's the thing. Sometimes it takes you a second. You're like, can I? And then you just like, you just got to kind of like think it out for a moment. And then you're like, oh yeah, absolutely. I got this. And that's actually how we met online a million years ago. We both did sponsored work for the same company.
It's true.
And we only met in person for the first time earlier this year.
I know. It was so nice.
It was so nice
to meet you in person.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was great. I don't do very much sponsored or brand work anymore. And I do,
same.
I miss that forced creativity like that. Cause nobody else does that. I come up with ideas and stuff, but I'm not going to be like, okay, Christine, today, ready, set, go. Like, as I'm on Chopped, right?
Like, right. Well, can I tell you, sometimes we do this in my house occasionally. I'll have my husband and my son pick out, like, if I'm just like, I don't know what I want to make. I'll say, go pick out 5 things, put them in a box. We'll unveil and I get one veto.
Oh.
So I get one veto. And then I'll just like see what I can come up with based on the things that they give me. And that's kind of, it's fun.
That is super fun. But wait, I need to know, are they trying to stump you? Like, are they doing like tuna fish and chocolate sauce? Or are they choosing things that they actually would like to have in their meal?
They've done both. My husband definitely, he likes to be very like minimalist. So he'll be like, what do we need to use up and get rid of? So I know we did one once where it was like ground bison and like fennel pollen and like, you know, jarred okra, but it ended up being really good, like a tube of polenta, but I ended up making something like really interesting with it. So
that sounds fun.
I think if I gave my 12-year-old free rein over all of the ingredients, it might be a different situation, but yeah.
Well, and then they might not eat the dinner. Like,
yeah, you pick it, you eat it, kid.
Yeah, exactly. That's great. I love it. Well, okay. So Ashley, have you brought a surprise recipe for me today?
I have. And it's one of my all-time favorite recipes. And it's one that I used to make. I did a lot of virtual cooking classes for, especially in the 2020 to 2022, 23 range. And so it's a sheet pan dinner.
Ooh.
And I call it a broiler kebab sheet pan meal. So my father is from Iran. And so I have an affinity for Persian food. And a lot of it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to take the idea of the like ground meat kebabs that he made, but make them doable on a weeknight.
Oh, I love that. And it's
yeah.
under the broiler on a sheet pan. And
yeah.
And when it's the ground meat kebabs, that kind of.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, not like chunks of chicken.
Yeah, yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I love those.
Yeah, and he always did them with ground beef. So I've done them with beef. We actually really like it with ground lamb. Mm-hmm. And I've also, you know, in recent years, I'm trying to make more inclusive recipes and just like give people options. So it's also great with like vegan ground meat substitute.
Oh, interesting. I haven't really cooked with that. Does it behave the same way as ground meat and this sort of thing?
I find that it's great in a place where you would use, yeah, like ground beef. I don't think that it's like when you would use ground chicken, because that's kind of like its own thing. Okay. You know, you got to cook it more and all that. So I think it's a great swap in like chili or sloppy joes or burgers or kebab.
Okay, well, very cool. So are you telling me about the beef ones, lamb or?
This recipe, you can do it with any. What's your favorite of those meats? You can do it with any of them.
Let's go with beef. That one is
okay. And then the OG how I used to make it.
And you're basically saying that it's going to be pretty similar whether it's the lamb or the substitute. Yeah.
The only swap that you would do, I've done it without an egg, because I use an egg to kind of bind it. Mm-hmm. I find with the vegan ground, it doesn't need that because it's a little looser. And then once I made this when my sister-in-law was having some like restrictions, she couldn't do eggs for a while. So instead of an egg, I just did a splash of water with the ground lamb and it was great.
Okay, perfect. That's good to know. Okay, so where do you start for these sheep pan kebabs?
Okay, so I get my broiler preheated, and I know a lot of people are afraid of the broiler, but don't be, it's not scary. If you have a gas stove, which I don't, you can preheat it on high with the door closed. If you have an electric stove like I do, a lot of times it'll like kind of tilt open so that it stays ajar. Mm-hmm. If you close it, the electric sensor will be like, oh, okay, we're preheated, and it'll keep turning off and it'll like cycle. Mm-hmm. So that's something that was useful to a lot of people in my cooking classes to know, is to like leave it cracked open a little bit.
Oh.
And if you have an electric stove and it doesn't tilt open on its own, mm-hmm. you can take like a wooden spoon, like just wood, not one with a plastic tip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just stick it in between the door and the oven to just give it a, like a little bit of a crack in there.
And help, wait.
So element stays on.
I broil things all the time and I don't do any of this. So what is this?
So do you have electric or
electric
gas?
Oven. And I don't think it tilts. And I actually just got a new oven and I don't think it tilts either.
Okay. No. Well, it might, and you maybe just didn't know.
Oh, maybe.
Or, like, sometimes they have, like, when you go to open it, it'll just, like, hold itself slightly open.
Oh.
Yeah, so the electric element, if the door is closed, it just keeps kicking off and on. So you want it to be, like, constantly giving heat on top, because it's a great way to cook things more quickly.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
No, that would be great. You know what? I need to go and figure this out. I have a broiled steak recipe on my site that was done by a contributor a long time ago. And when I tried retesting it, I couldn't recreate
that
her results.
That could be why.
I bet why. I couldn't get it to brown on top.
Especially if that person had a gas range, they wouldn't have known.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Necessarily.
Okay. I'm going over to my to-do list right now.
Yeah. love giving other people to-dos. My to-do list is long enough.
Yeah, there you go. No, I love it. This is great. Okay, so you're preheating your broiler with this special
to high, because some broilers have high or low, right, so I go on high. You could do low. It'll just take longer. And this is, if you make this just with the stuff on the tray, 20 minutes. Like, that's it. It's great. So I'll line a baking sheet with foil. It helps clean up. Like, sometimes you'll get a little stuff that you'll have to clean, but it's great for cleanup, and it helps the meat not stick. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just give it a little spritz with, like, I usually use avocado oil, but whatever cooking spray, or you could rub a little oil on it just to help keep the stuff from sticking. Mm-hmm. Then often I'll double this because I love it as leftovers, and the meat also freezes well. So if you want to do two instances of this recipe, line another sheet pan, have it ready, but only cook them one at a time, because the broiler is only going to hit that one. And you want the rack like right up on top underneath the broiler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So then you're going to just grab a large bowl and you're going to add a pound of ground beef, lamb, vegan, ground meat substitute, whatever you want. Don't use poultry, though. I haven't tested cooking times on that. That would be a little trickier.
And it's so funny to me. I have this.
Pork might work, actually.
Pork could work. Sometimes there's a lot of fat in ground pork, so it could be my thing with ground. So for the longest time, I thought that ground turkey and ground chicken were interchangeable with each other. And they're not. I had a ground turkey burger and I tried, actually, this is how I ended up with a ground chicken burger on my website, because I had the ground turkey burger on the site and I loved it. And then I tried making it with ground chicken one day and it like was a floppy, awful mess. It's just wetter. Yeah. Like it just didn't work at all. And it was so weird. But yeah, their water contents are different. Mm-hmm. The fat contents are different. Like they just don't match. Yeah. And then they don't fully match ground meat, especially for things when you want to hold them together, like in like spaghetti sauce. And
I feel like ground poultry can really easily get tough, like if you overwork it and you don't. So you're going to have like a tough, just fall apart burger. It's not a good.
No, it doesn't sound good. Doesn't sound good. Okay. So we're not using turkey or chicken. We're going to use beef, lamb or substitute. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. So you have that in a bowl. You're going to add a large egg. I do some fresh parsley. So 3 tablespoons about, and you don't have to be like super scientific with this. Mm-hmm. If your meat is a little over a pound, you know, sometimes the packages aren't exactly a pound. Mm-hmm. It's great with ground bison too.
Oh yeah.
Bison is a great one. So it can be a little here or there. It's fine. And then in a traditional ground meat kebab like this, like my dad would make, he would grate an onion. And so that gives some moisture and onion flavor. But what I do instead for this kind of shortcut is I use 1.5 teaspoons of dried minced onion. And even sometimes I'll use like the dried minced toasted onion. It's like got a little brown on it. Oh. It's really good. So you get that onion flavor, but you're not adding a ton of liquid.
Mm-hmm. And then does it like hydrate from the moisture in the egg and the meat or?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really, it more like gives it flavor. You don't necessarily notice it like as pieces of onion because in the regular kebab, it's grated. So you don't really notice the pieces really in it.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Then I just do some salt and pepper. Inside the mix, about 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt and 1/4 teaspoon of freshly cracked pepper. Again, you do not have to super meticulously measure this. Mm-hmm. And then the thing that I think gives it a little bit of Middle Eastern flair that might sound weird, but just try it. Just try it. Is 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon.
Oh, yes, for sure. Sorry, I just keep interrupting you. I guess that's kind of my job. No. But so literally yesterday, I had to redo a recipe. Everybody who listens to the show knows that I got a new phone and the color balance is super wonky. I did a whole day of videos with the new phone and can't use any of them. So I had to redo and I redid this chicken shawarma recipe. And I was like, you know what? It was missing something last time. And I added cinnamon to it. And
so good.
A little pinch of cloves. It is unbelievable. My kids, I didn't think they were going to like it because it's like cinnamon chicken, cumin, like whatever. They loved it. We had it for dinner yesterday. That's amazing. It was so good.
Okay, that sounds delicious. And send that to me because I want to make that in a heartbeat. The other thing, I don't put it in this recipe. You certainly could, but I do put it in like a Persian meatloaf, is the leaves from celery. They have like a really delicate celery flavor without being chunks of it. Mm-hmm. So that could be a fun addition. I don't usually put it in here, but because this one is more of a like things from the pantry type of situation. So I'll take all of those.
Oh, wait, I want to interrupt you though. So you put the cinnamon in the meat mixture.
With the ground meat.
Is that something that Persian cooking has a lot of, is cinnamon in their savory, or like why is that like hitting it right?
They do a lot of kind of like, it's interesting. They do a lot of like fresh herbs as a cooked ingredient. And they have a lot of, those kind of like warming spices just like kind of show up in various places in Middle East or in Persian cuisine.
And cinnamon is one of them, or would it? It is cinnamon.
My dad never did it, but that doesn't mean that it's not. I know I have a lot of Persian cookbooks, and I have one that my grandma had brought to my stepmom when she visited when I was a kid. And it's like one side it's written in Farsi and the other side is written in English. Oh. And she, like my stepmom, got notes translated from what my grandma was saying, like what she does. So I like copied those notes into my own copy of the book because I'm like, well, if my grandma says, we're going to add, if she told me to add cinnamon, absolutely, I'm going to add cinnamon,
No, that sounds amazing. Okay, so you've got the salt, pepper, onion, cinnamon, and the meat and the egg. Is there anything else in there?
And parsley.
Parsley.
And then you just kind of use, hands are the best tool for this. You could use a spoon if you wanted to, but really just to get in there. And this isn't one that you really have to worry too much about overworking, like if you're trying to do like a really tender meatball or something. Because the other style of ground meat kebabs that my dad makes, you really kind of work it in there. I'll kind of mix it all together. You know, definitely make sure the egg yolk gets popped and mm-hmm. combined throughout. And then what I like to do is I kind of flatten it out in the bowl and I just kind of score it with my hands mm-hmm. to divide it. I'll do it in half and half again, and then those halves and half so that I get about 8 pieces.
Okay.
You can make them smaller or bigger, really. It's like you'll kind of figure out what you like. Sometimes mm-hmm. I only make 6 out of this. Sometimes I make 8. And then you take each of those 8s and you kind of pat it out in your hand. You're kind of making like an oval. So if you kind of use like the shape of your palm mm-hmm. and flatten it, so kind of like a burger patty, but more of an oval. Mm-hmm. You could do round ones. Mm-hmm. That's fine. You could do meatball shapes. Like, it's really whatever you kind of like to do. So then I'll put those on the sheet pan that's already been sprayed. And then not touching. You want to like space them out like you're baking cookies or something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I'll take a pint of cherry tomatoes, grape tomatoes, or you could use bigger tomatoes, cut them up into wedges. And I'll sprinkle those on the sheet pan all around. And then I'll cut up some yellow onions, like one or two. I really like the extra veggies on the side. Cut those into thin wedges. Sprinkle those around also, not on top of the meat, but just, you know, kind of everything's just on the sheet pan. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then I will drizzle all the veggies, technically fruit and veggie, with olive oil or spritz them with the cooking spray again, you know, mm-hmm. and then season everything with a little salt and pepper on top. That's what goes on the sheet pan.
Wow.
Pop it into the broiler for 8 minutes. Take it out, flip the meat patties over mm-hmm. and cook them for about another 5. It depends on your preference. Like ground lamb and ground beef are great when they're not like fully cooked through, mm-hmm. but a lot of people, some people want them fully cooked through so you can mm-hmm. cook it longer. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes, depending, I might take the meat off and let the veggies get a little more charred because I love a charred onion.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's really nice. So then when you go to serve it, you can either do, if you didn't want to do any other sides or anything like that, you could just stuff all of that into pita bread.
Oh.
You could throw some feta in there if you want, cucumbers, and you have a nice little sandwich. Mm-hmm. I'll often get some basmati rice started while I'm assembling everything, so they're just kind of done at the same time. Mm-hmm. And if you are a fan of yogurt, I love all yogurty side dishes. Mm-hmm. There's something that is a Persian side dish. It's called maska kiar, and it's kind of like Persian version of a tzatziki or a raita.
Oh.
So it's got like cucumbers, mint, like dried mint. Sometimes some versions have walnuts and currants or raisins in them. Mm-hmm. But just something, it's like a nice kind of cool complement to it. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing, if you want to do like if you've ever had ground sumac, it's great sprinkled on top of Christine's eyes just lit up. it's a really great kind of like almost lemony spice that just adds a little something extra. You can sprinkle, I sprinkle it on top of everything on the plate. Mm-hmm. But like if you've been to a Persian restaurant, there'll be a lot of times salt, pepper, and then a little container of this brown spice, and that's ground sumac.
Oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I do know. So I have sumac here. I took it on interview show a while ago, and I took a bunch of different spices to try. That's the one that blew mm-hmm. everybody away. And it's the one I will literally, if I end up, like I have people over and we end up talking about like, mm-hmm. they'll either ask me food questions or whatever. I'm almost always grabbing the sumac and being like, taste this. Like it just is. So if you haven't tried it before and you're listening, like they sell it at your regular grocery store nowadays. Mm-hmm. And so good.
Yeah. Be careful with it though, because I did one time go to make a recipe from a magazine for a sumac crusted chicken, but a lot of times there's salt in with the sumac.
Oh.
And it was so salty. Like I couldn't, it was really, really salty.
So taste it.
So yeah, it kind of gives like a bright, salty citrus note mm-hmm. to things.
Yeah,
it's great on really anything grilled.
Maybe slightly floral citrus. Do you know what I
mean?
Yeah. Like it's just uh-huh. like, it's not exactly like lemon lime. It's like a little,
And there are some things online with like things you could substitute for sumac. I have a sumac vinaigrette that I use on a fattoush salad. Mm. And I came up with some things like if you really don't have this, but you still want to make it, like you could try this. It won't be quite the same, but mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it'll get you in the ballpark.
Like zest or something, coriander maybe? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's a very unique one.
Yeah, no, it's good. Well, this sounds...
So that's it. It's like really easy. It comes together quickly. My kid loves it. If you have kids, it's a great thing for them to help, like squishing around the meat, making mm-hmm. the patties.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great idea. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds amazing. This one is on your website.
It is on my website, yep.
Yeah, so it is. I will link to that from the show notes. Big flavors from a tiny kitchen, but I'll link to the sheet pan broiled kebabs. Can you tell people where they can find you? Oh, well, I just said your name of your blog, but where they can find do online if they want to see what you're up to?
Absolutely. I am on Big Flavors from a Tiny Kitchen is at bigflavorstinykitchen.com. I'm on all of the socials pretty much all the socials at Big Flavors. And I also have a podcast, me and my friend slash co-host. She is a genealogist and I am family history expert. And I do obviously food things. So we have a podcast called Passing the Plate that's at passingtheplate.org. And we talk about community and connections and bringing people together over food and like family history and traditions. And it's a really great way because like with this recipe that we talked through today, I introduced a lot of people to Persian cuisine through a kind of Persian, like kind of dip your toes into it recipe. So people are able to taste things that I grew up with, but in a way that's accessible to them. So I really love being able to do stuff like that and learning about other traditions. And it's a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know. The podcast is fantastic. I don't know how I didn't mention it at the beginning. Passing the Plate. And you and Lisa have such a good rapport. I really love listening to you guys.
She's wonderful.
Yeah, I know. It's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Ashley. It was so great to do this.
Thank you for having me.
I told you Ashley has all the tips. So great. And that recipe, oh my God, I have to tell you, I actually made that a couple of months ago for dinner. Marty wasn't here, but the kids were here and we loved it. I used the ground beef and I put everything else. I'm looking at the recipe right now and I put everything else, the pepper, the cinnamon. It was delicious. And I'm actually right now going to write it down on my meal plan for next week because it was so good and they liked it so much. We cannot forget it. We need to make it again. Everybody give it a try. And everybody make sure you are following Ashley on social media as well. She is Big Flavors on Instagram and on Facebook and on Pinterest. You will find her and you will love her recipes and her tips for cooking in a small kitchen. She is at Big Flavors from a Tiny Kitchen. Thank you, Ashley. And I don't know, we're going to a conference soon, or I am. I'm wondering if you're going to be there. Maybe we'll see each other there. I hope so. It's been a while. Okay, now, what is going on in my kitchen this week? I don't mean this weekend and the filet mignon and all that for actual recipe testing. Coming up, I am working on a homemade nacho cheese sauce recipe. And I will tell you the reason that I'm doing it is that my beer cheese recipe, which I love, that one, I have discovered that when it sets up in the fridge, it kind of reminds me of the Cheese Whiz stuff that they used to have. Well, I guess you still have it, but we used to have it when I was growing up in Canada. Actually, it was very common to use it as a spread on toast to the point where it even came in like the little containers like peanut butter or jam that you would get at like a breakfast restaurant. You would see Cheese Whiz versions of that in Canada. I've been told that that is not a thing in the United States, and I'm very sad for you because it was so good spread on toast. Anyhow, my beer cheese recipe, when it is in the fridge, sets up and becomes spreadable and is very tasty, but it has like that mild beer flavor, which I don't necessarily want on my breakfast toast. So it occurred to me that if I did a more basic nacho cheese sauce, that would be like the beer cheese and would be delicious on tortilla chips and things like that, but also might just set up in the fridge and be spreadable on toast like Cheese Whiz, but a little more homemade. So I'm working on the nacho cheese sauce, and I am also doing the pictures for an egg salad recipe. I love egg salad, and it just occurred to me that none of the recipes that I see online are quite like what I do, and I wanted it to be, well, more like what I do when I make egg salad. I want to share that with the world, right? So I am doing my kind of really basic, simple egg salad recipe. The only thing that's super different about it, I think, is that I mash the cooked yolks together with the mayonnaise and the seasonings, and then that's what I use to toss with my chopped up egg whites. So I think it's a little bit different. People often just like mash and you get, I don't know, you get like a mixture of the egg white and egg yolk kind of chopped up. The egg yolk is a little bit dry, I find, but like full of flavor. And so by mashing that really well together with the mayonnaise, it is not dry at all and you get all of its flavor, right? So that's why I do what I do. So I'm just putting some finishing touches on that recipe and doing the picture. So that is what I have planned for testing this week. As to what is new on the website, this past week we had, oh, the chili recipe. I'm obsessed with that chili recipe. It is just exactly what chili should be. If you like imagine chili, just like think about chili right now, imagine tasting it, what that tastes like. That is this just classic, pure, beautiful chili. There are a couple of little steps at the beginning that I know not everybody does, but I think they make a big difference. Super good. The other recipe that went live is the chicken salad. I have as many opinions about chicken salad as I have about egg salad, and you can see that on the Cookful. I talk about why I like cubed chicken instead of shredded chicken in my chicken salad. That recipe is live on the Cookful now, and the chili is live on Cook a Story. Oh, and I did episodes of this podcast about both of those just this past week, so you could listen to those as well if you'd like. I think that is everything I have to say. I'm not totally positive. As I told you, my head is a little light and fluffy, and my throat is congested, so I am not thinking as clearly as normal. Hopefully I haven't said anything embarrassing. I don't think I have. Well, anyhow, I am going to sign off and get myself ready for my Valentine's Day dinner. I have a grocery list to make and some shopping, but I promise I'm going to be relaxing most of the time and recovering from this whole throat fever situation that I've had this week. And yeah, I'll get a lot of relaxation done. I am not going to allow the chore creep to happen. And I'm going to eat some good food. I hope you also get to have some good food this weekend and that you have a lovely Valentine's Day. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Ashley, for being an amazing guest. I hope to see you soon. I am Christine Pittman from cookthestory.com, thecookful.com, cookfortwo.us, and this podcast, Recipe of the Day. I hope you have a great weekend. Let's get cooking.